You're listening to Co-op Mood, a casually serious conversation about playing video games.
This is episode 9. You will be deceived.
Let's get into it. I'm Sally. You can find me on Twitter at SallyT.
And I'm Shane. You can find me on Twitter at Mundangerous.
Okay, so Shane, we kick off every episode with a news story from the world of video games, and we were just so tickled by a few different stories that we decided to just really front load this episode with fun news items. So let's get into it. The first one is a tweet from Concerned Ape, which is the developer of Stardew Valley.
Big news.
And the tweet, big news. The tweet is simply, in update 1.5, you can move your bed.
Game changed. Now I can sleep in my living room.
Yeah, can you explain the groundbreaking significance of this update?
Yeah, so at the end of every night of Stardew, you have to go back to your bed or else you fall asleep at 2 a.m. wherever you are. And if that's not in your house, you get you lose some money, you get robbed, or you have to pay a fee because somebody comes to quote unquote rescue you or whatever. So you might lose a couple items or something like that, right? So you have to get back to your house. But a lot of times what happens is you try to, when you're like me, an action maximizing monster, you push it to the limit, right? And if you get in your front door, you might not make it to your bed and then you don't get fully rested and you get this whole problem. So now you can just put your bed in your living room right next to your door, like all people make their normal houses. And you can just hop right in bed as soon as you get inside your house. Or perhaps you can move it outside of your house, which would be absurd. But I would love to be sleeping in a gazebo or something like that.
Yeah, that is what Twitter user Stardew playing Twitter users are clamoring for, is when will we find out if we can place this bed outside?
Right. the real update we need.
Exactly. So what's amazing about this is that, first of all, I encourage everyone to just look at the replies to the original tweet because they're pretty fun.
They are full of joy.
They really are. They're full of joy and also full of requests for additional features, some of which are totally in earnest. And I always think it's kind of funny when people request huge additions to games as if a developer just has to flip a switch.
Right.
That's the kids you have grow up and become characters in the game. Just just flip that switch up, Concerned Ape.
Exactly.
But there's also
what about aliens? Why can't aliens visit?
Right. What if this was a grand strategy game instead? And then there's also people requesting really funny things. But the other thing that's great about this is there is an article in PC Mag by Haroon Sultan that ran a couple days ago as we're recording this. And the headline is Stardew Valley developer confirms beds movable in upcoming 1.5 update, possibilities endless. And the entire article, I cannot tell if it's tongue in cheek.
That title is longer than the tweet.
Yeah, much longer.
Yeah.
Three times longer. So the article is this very hyperbolic discussion of how this change is going to affect gameplay and mention of how it's going to impact the esports meta, which is amazing.
That's true. It will affect the esports meta.
Yeah, which is a real thing. So either this is just a really enthusiastic sort of analysis of this update, or it's totally tongue-in-cheek. I would love for people to weigh in and tell me which one it is. Either way, I love it.
I think it's very tongue-in-cheek. There's also no esports meta.
No, but there is competitive Stardew.
I mean, I guess, but I don't know. Yes, I know there are Stardew speedruns and record holding and things like that, but it just, sure, fine. Withdrawn.
Listen, Shane, if you don't want to go in with me on sponsoring an esports Stardew team, then that's your future financial loss. So let me ask you a question as a Stardew player. Is this one of those things that people have been desperate for and now the developer is finally making it a thing?
No, absolutely not. I think this is it's, walking through your living room to your bedroom is a minor inconvenience. it's not a big deal at all. It's just, the thing is, the Stardew community is, so happy. In general, it's just a game that is, the antithesis of, internet toxicity culture. Like, you know, it's one guy developing it. Like, the updates come out like once a year now. You know, he's working on other stuff. And like, yeah, fine. Like, great. We're moving the bed. Like, let's get hype, though, because it's Stardew and we're getting an update, right? Like, I think the real excitement is confirmed 1.5 update.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Who even knows what all it's going to include, because we're just focused on like the bed situation.
Right, exactly. I think it's just like Stardew players enjoy Stardew and are having fun, which is great. That's the point.
I love that. I love you, Stardew community. I'm picturing like when you're in kindergarten and you're sitting in a circle and there's just like a story being told to you by a teacher. That's sort of like the vibe, which I don't mean to sound patronizing. Like, it just, I just mean in the sense that like, it seems like a bunch of people enjoying something, getting a lot of joy out of something together. And it's all very delightful and void of toxicity, which is very rare.
Right. The one good video game.
Yeah. Although, is there like a Stardew, like, what is it called on 4chan? It's not a subreddit, like a sub-chan for Stardew?
I don't know. Almost certainly. Oh, I mean, I'm sure it gets used. I don't want to get into it.
Let's never find out. Like, stricken from the record. okay, so that's news item number one. Shane, do you want to tell us about news item number two?
So the next thing that we're going to talk about is Philadelphia Phillies pitching prospect Connor Brogdon was playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive CSGO when he got drafted. And anyway, he's eventually been called up to the bullpen, which is why the Philadelphia Inquirer decided to write this article about him. But he just let that slip that he got called, that he got drafted in like the 10th round. And he interrupted his Counter-Strike game in order to take the call from the Phillies GM.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Like, so you can't pause it or quit, I guess, in the middle of a match, because you can be.
I mean,
you'll punish or whatever.
Yep, you'll lose your rank. You get lever penalties and things. Like, it's a competitive game, so you've got to finish a match once you start.
Right. So he gets the call. He sees on the caller ID that it's the Phillies director of player development, and he like turns one earphone to the phone call, but keeps the other one on the game and is like fully playing the game while being offered this position in the Phillies bullpen.
Obviously it's like, it's a dream come true for a baseball player or whatever to get drafted and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a $5,000 signing bonus. So like, that's cool, but like, can't lose my rank, man.
No, right. No. Like, if you think I'm losing my rank, you are absolutely dead wrong.
Right. Anyway,
I've never been presented with stakes this high, but I have to say that I've like not stopped playing a video game to like, I've definitely like had phone conversations that I'm sure the person on the other end thought that they had my undivided attention when I was actually like fully engaged in playing a video game. So I relate to this energy a little bit.
Exactly. I know that you're going to talk 90% of the time, so I'm good here.
Exactly. So let me like make some progress on my Animal Crossing Island.
And then our next story, Sally, is probably the one that has the most far-reaching implications for the world, really. But CNN reporting, I think widely reported, that Fortnite has been removed from the Apple App Store. And I think since this article, it has also been removed from the Google Play Store. And since this article, like within hours, they filed a 62-page brief. And they are now... Epic, the owner of Fortnite, is now suing both Apple and Google over their, you know, whatever, App Store monopoly, I guess. I didn't read the brief, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I also didn't read the brief, although I did read the first couple pages, and it's pretty fun. It definitely reads like literary fiction. Like, they decided to really flex with this whole, like, with the writing of this lawsuit. And also the Epic also... produced an ad that's like a kind of a satire of Apple's iconic 1984 ad, where in the ad, instead of IBM being the monopolistic villain, it's actually Apple. And it's just kind of this hilarious thing of like, let's root for little guy, Epic, the multi-million dollar company.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Epic, the little guy, backed by Tencent, which has deep links to the Communist Party, but we're going to make a 1984 trailer for it. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, yeah. Is that real?
40% owned by Tencent, which is what this is about. Like, let's be clear here. Apple didn't take them off the App Store. They didn't sue them in response. Like, they provoked Apple by like directly violating the terms. Apple took them off the store, and then they filed the lawsuit within hours. Like, they were provoked, right? This is a marketing stunt. They're also using children as part of their propaganda machine for this. Like, because Fortnite players are 13 years old.
Like, that's very true.
So who's upset about this? It's not adults in the room, right? It's kids. And that's really what they're positioning here to try and like start this lawsuit. And it's all a response to the Trump China nonsense that's going on as well, right? With selling off TikTok and whatnot, right? Like, it's all tied together because it all comes back to Tencent ultimately. So
this is like, what is it? Like, what kind of theater? This is like political theater disguised as like marketing. I mean, what even is it?
I think it's a marketing stunt. It's a marketing stunt for their lawsuit, right? I mean, the lawsuit, I think, had to happen. And not to say that there aren't some merits to like Apple's 30% and kind of draconian policies on payments and subscriptions and things through the App Store, right? Like, sure, we can have a conversation about that and reasonable people can disagree. But like, the events of this are very clearly just political posturing between two governments that are, you know, in a trade war. It's like, I think what it comes down to.
I had no idea. Just to reveal, if anyone was wondering like the extent to which I'm paying attention to like global geopolitics, you now know that the answer is almost none. so I thought this was epic. You know, standing up to Apple's like kind of antitrust tendencies in a real way. I didn't realize that it was this whole other thing.
It is, right? I mean, let's be clear here. Like, there might be a legit antitrust claim against Apple, right? Like, yeah. It might be valid. But I think you also have to consider like all the events that are going that prompted this like lawsuit, right? I mean, at any point they could have sued Apple over antitrust concerns, right? Like, they didn't have to remove the app. And they could have prompted them to remove the app at any moment. You know, it's not that hard to just accept outside payments and get kicked off. So it's theater. It's funny theater, I guess. But I'm not expecting a whole lot. I think Fortnite will be back on the App Store soon enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty amazing that like within like hours of this happening, they had like this fully produced ad and
yeah, so funny. On. Funny how that works, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like it was a stunt and not just a genuine event.
It's almost like it was fully planned. Well, you know, lawsuits are, you know, many of our greatest civil liberties start from people, you know, trying to change laws in the highest court in the land. So what I'm saying is that this is this most important social justice issue of our time, I guess.
And we'll keep our eye on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, exactly. That's news. Shane, do you want to talk about what you're playing right now?
Yep, I am on trend and I am playing Fall Guys, the cutest battle royale game.
It is adorable.
It is the like game show version of Battle Royale, I guess, in which you play kind of a cutesy little sprite who runs around and participates in these like little races and like different kind of games, I guess, like think like Wipeout or that show that used to come on like Spike, which was like the English dubbing of the Japanese like ridiculous game show where you basically send a bunch of people through like a bizarre obstacle course filled with like mud or slime or, you know, boffer arms and like try to knock them off platforms. It's basically that game. It plays really quickly. It's kind of like fun and cute. And, you know, you can play 3 or 4 rounds in 20 minutes and not feel bad about it.
Yeah, it's really cute. The physics is really fun. There's like a lot of kind of, it reminds me of like the Weeble Wobble toys. Like there's a lot of, you know, it's not like floaty, but it's not like zippy. It's like a little bit of both kind of, I guess.
Yeah, there's a it constantly feels like I'm about to fall over, even though you don't actually fall over that much. Unless you get like bumped in the air, then you'll fall over. But like, yeah, your only options are to like jump, dive, or I think you can like grab and pull people. And that's about it. Like there's no sprint button, you know, there's not really any like, I don't know, technique to anything.
It's just
kind of run around, manage your camera and try to get through this obstacle course without getting hit by a, you know, a oversized fruit falling down a conveyor belt to you.
Totally. I'm loving this whole thing of like very cute games to play during the pandemic. Like, I think Animal Crossing is kind of one of them, and that game Ooblets, which I've never played, but just this thing of like, you know, you're gonna like, no sharp corners, everything is very rounded, the colors are very bright, the stakes are very low, like it's just all very, very cute, which I'm in favor of.
I think there is this like weird trend where, like, you know, as kids you hate kidsy cutesy stuff, right? But then as adults you kind of have nostalgia for it, and there's this weird blend where like what kids are interested in is driven by streaming, and what streamers are playing are these cutesy kidsy games. So like the kids are into the things that look like they should be for kids. Like Fortnite,
that's so funny,
you know, like Fortnite doesn't look like a serious shooter, even though it is a big money game. You know, it's so it's just kind of funny, but yeah, it's a refreshing little, like, you know, break from the norm. It's a good way to kill a few minutes, and you know, someday I'll win one.
Totally. I also am very excited. I would love for this to become a competitive esport, because a game where I would just love for e-athletes, I don't know what you call them. I would love for them to like discover what the technique is to this game and just like somehow min max, like, which you can't even do. There's nothing to min max really, but like just to determine like what is the way to actually dominate in this game.
There's gotta be,
right?
there's optimal pathing, there's like little tricks of like using bumpers and different things to go faster. There's a way.
Man, I can't wait for that entire thing to happen so I can watch the competition.
We should host a tournament for Fall Guys. $30 cash prize.
I love this for us.
It's all we can muster. It's one and a half copies of the game.
Yeah, one and a half copies of the game, and just absolutely amazing bragging rights of being an athlete in a game that it's like not clear if there's a, like, can you intentionally set out to win? And no, I know there is technique. I know it's not like luck, but it's like, you know, I played it for a little while until I was like, nah, this is not for me. And you're just like running through trying to avoid being swept by like a giant arm.
Yeah. Or a giant mass of people.
And I was like, yeah, there is a way that I could figure out how to do this, but I am not the person who's going to figure that out.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's a streaming game for sure. Like, it's fun to watch people who are fun to watch play games play this game. So I think it's great for $20. It's not changing the world. So what are you playing right now, Sally?
I have been playing Borderlands 3. My brother and I like to play shooters together. It's not a game that I would play by myself or probably with anyone else, just because like, what's fun about it is like hanging out with my brother and like joking around. I'm not really a big fan of first person shooter games, even though I have played them and I do play them with my brother. I maintain that like first person is just like a terrible way to play a game because you don't get to see your character's cool outfits. And like, why would you not want to see your character's cool outfits?
Speaking of, when you finish this, I have to talk to you about an outfit that I bought.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to talk about that and to have everyone hear about that. Anyway, you know, it's fine. It's fun. It's cute. The art style is cool. It's like this cel shaded thing. There's a whole story that I haven't paid any attention to because when there's dialogue or exposition is when I check Twitter. But it's fun. I mean, like what I need these games to be is like a skill tree and like perks that aren't too complicated that I can understand pretty much instantly, and cool weapons that do ridiculous things, and like bonus points if like the people I'm shooting are not people, but actually like weird alien robot animals that don't really exist. And this game is like hitting all those criteria. So it's a good time.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to be said for the skill tree that is just apparent. You know, it's like, if I want to be a sniper, I do this. If I want to use pistols, I do this. If I want to, you know, like run and gun, I do this, right? And it's just like, cool. Like, I don't have to make a lot of decisions. I just get to decide what I like. And then it's very obvious, as opposed to like trying to min max and find every like 2% advantage and stack it up to, you know, a 20%. And like, oh God, it's exhausting.
Totally. Yeah. I like it to be like extremely simple. I like for like, as soon as I like buy the perk or activate the perk, I am doing more damage or healing faster. Like, I just want to see it immediately. I'm not trying to like get involved in like a really intricate build. Just like, I want to blow things up better, basically.
Yeah. That's why my favorite perks in Outer Worlds was just increased carrying capacity, you know?
Yeah.
The best perk.
Yeah. The perk is like, better deal with the fact that this game has a fucking encumbrance system.
Exactly.
Really annoying. So Shane, before I talk about the other game I'm playing, I want to hear about your outfit story.
So we've talked about how I'm playing League. Mm-hmm. I have now made the leap into a person who has spent money on League. So I bought a season pass for the current event, which helps me like unlock more champions and things, so I have more options in the game. Mm-hmm. But I use the leftover real dollars to buy my first skin, Sally. So I have an outfit.
That's amazing. So you're officially, this is a lifestyle now, not just a hobby.
Yes, exactly. And I want to point out that I've played hundreds of hours of Overwatch on PC. I do not own a single skin or unlockable.
Incredible.
I've never used a skin, a spray, a player icon, anything in Overwatch, a game that I've played hundreds of hours. I got like 8 hours of League and I'm in.
I have to say, like, what you showed me you got to choose, like, for your outfit, I would have 100% spent money on that. Like, yeah. It was just a cool look.
Yeah, so I play mostly Garen, who is a top laner. His, like, you know, general thing is that he's like a paladin or a knight or whatever, and he's a big armored dude with a sword. The skin that I bought is called Demacia Vice. He's from the Kingdom of Demacia, so it's got a very Miami Vice vaporwave kind of theme. It gives you like a very like vaporwave theme song. Like when you back, it shows like the purple grid, you know, that kind of scrolls under you, like that sort of like very Far Cry Blood Dragon type theme. Mm-hmm. He wears a jean jacket and white pants. Like he's got, you know, sunglasses and a big purple like glowing laser sword. He just looks like perfectly 80s nonsense, and I just love it so much.
Yeah, it's the fucking coolest look. So are you playing against, is it possible for people to get skins in totally other genres? Like, would there be a Garen that's wearing like knight's armor and mm-hmm. carrying
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, so like, you know, the League is a weird game where there's lots of different themes going. So there's a lot of like the like fantasy, like Western fantasy, and then sort of more of the like anime and like some of the like a lot of like frankly kind of like weeby sort of characters in there too, you know, you're like big boob anime girls and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then the skins like are just a full range of whatever kind of pop culture thing is relevant or fun or whatever they decided to do. So it makes it actually very hard with like 160 champions and you don't know, you know, but maybe a third of them when you're new, and then also they get skins, and it's like I don't even know who's who here, you know. And
that's amazing.
So it's a little frustrating, but like it's cool. I got the best skin. I'm good.
You definitely did. Are you telling me there's 160 playable characters in this?
There's
game?
160 playable characters, Sally.
Whoa.
They all have own skills and abilities. They all have different itemization and builds. They all have different roles. Yeah, it's is it normal? Shit. No, it's a damn obsession, and it's a crime. And I'm sorry that I got into it, but I did, and here I am.
That's incredible. I love this. I mean, as you know, I'm a huge fan of this journey. So I like the updates.
All right, let's talk about the other game that we are both playing. You more than me, but I did take a little dip into it. On the other side of this bumper.
Okay, so the game that we're going to be talking about is Interrogation, You Will Be Deceived. Interrogation, colon, You Will Be Deceived.
These names.
I mean, look, let me just, since you said that, let me just come out of the gate with saying that I feel like a colon in the title of anything is just, you have big shoes to fill. Like, I'm going to need on both sides of that colon to be like blown away, which I'm not with Interrogation, You Will Be Deceived. But the other thing about this title, I feel like it should be just a law that if you create a video game, you should give it a title so that when people Google for like walkthroughs and hints and help, you actually, what is returned is actually about the game and not about, for example, like studies of interrogation techniques, which is what yes. I kept getting.
So, okay. So I installed this on Steam. I think you played on Switch, right?
On Switch, yeah.
Yeah, so I had an issue where, like, I had the super stuttery, like, graphics that made it, like, actually uncomfortable to watch because it was just, mm-hmm. like, jittering. And it was a VSync issue is ultimately what it came down to. But I tried to Google for what's going on here, and all I got was that. I got either videos of playthroughs, which was not helpful, or I got studies on interrogation techniques, mostly in Iraq or Afghanistan, right? And it was like, okay, this sucks. Like, and then I realized it's actually a current game. I could just look on the Steam forums, and sure enough, it's a known bug. VSync fixed it. It's all good.
I'm glad that you actually said that to me, because that was how I eventually did figure out how to get through certain parts of the game, was like just looking at the conversations on Steam. My Googling yielded absolutely zero. But right. So this game was released in 2019. It's developed by Critique Gaming, which is based in Romania. And in this game, you play a police officer who is tasked with basically rooting out a terrorist organization. It's propaganda. I think we can just, I think, like, you know, the game is exploring a bunch of interesting things about, like, authority and the state and social unrest and alienation in our modern society. But, you know, ultimately, I feel pretty comfortable saying that it's propaganda, which I don't know if that's relevant, but it seems relevant, like, in the year of our Lord 2020, to just, like, put that out there, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think it's fair. I mean, it has, like, a sort of noir skin to it, but at the end of the day, like, noir was a lot about sort of distrust of those institutions, and interrogation seems to be a little more about, it's great to be one of those institutions.
Yeah. That's definitely a takeaway. The game has a really cool look to it. It's kind of black and white and shades of gray. The animation looks a lot to me like that movie, A Scanner Darkly.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Shane?
No, I don't.
Okay. This is a landmark event where this is the first time that I've brought up something that you don't know about.
That's not true at all.
It's very true. So the look of it is basically rotoscoping is when you... the way I understand it, I'm going to just go ahead and explain it totally wrong, if no one minds, which is that you take a bunch of photographs. Shane, I just sent you a picture of A Scanner Darkly in Discord if you want to see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
You take a bunch of photographs and then you, like, draw over it. So it looks like photorealistic, but also drawn by hand. It to me looks like a combination of, like, if a film and a comic book reproduced and had a baby,
you would
have the look of the game.
It's the GTA 5, like, loading screen art, basically.
Totally. Yeah, that's a much more succinct explanation.
Yeah, sorry. You have to speak it in, like, dumb terms for me.
Yeah, sorry I brought up that movie. But yeah, so basically the deal is that, you know, you can play it kind of as a visual novel where you just click through and get a story about this cop trying to figure out what the deal is with this terrorist organization. Or you can play it as you actually, you interrogate these suspects, ask them questions. Your conversational choices impact future conversational choices is what mm-hmm. I'll say. And so just to really quickly explain the gameplay loop, you get, like, a dossier on the suspect, you interrogate them, you then fill out a press release about what happened, you assign agents to different aspects of the investigation using a budget that you're given. You can read a newspaper story that's usually about what is some, it's tangentially or directly related to the investigation. You can read HR reports on your team. You can also get interviewed by the press, and you can also hang out with your team. You go to this bar called Hannigan's and you play Fuck, Chuck, or Stuck with them, which is really uncomfortable. Did you get to do that at all?
I did.
I don't like it.
Wait, is it? What was that? I thought it was Marry, Fuck, Kill. What is Fuck, Chuck,
or Stuck?
Yeah, that
is. I like Fuck, Chuck, or Stuck because the thing is that Fuck is obviously Fuck. Marry is Marry. And Stuck is you're stuck on a desert island with them.
Oh, so you don't have to kill them. You have to spend time with them.
No, well, Chuck is Chuck off a cliff. So you kill them.
Okay.
The thing that's different is that I just think that Stuck on a Desert Island gets across the decision that you're really making a little bit better. I didn't really mean to get this deeply into fuck trucker stuff.
It's a very dark view of marriage, but okay.
I know. It's extremely dark. Anyway, the point is you can like hang out with your team after hours and you end up, they ask you to play fuck trucker stuff, but with people on the team, which is, I don't know if you got that far.
I didn't get that far. Mine was like Abe Lincoln.
Oh yeah, that was, yeah. And you can also, yeah, it's with like historical figures, which is also kind of weird. But when you get to the one where you're choosing people who you work with who are in the room, I was like, okay, like this is a very like immersive and realistic representation of what it feels like to be at a very awkward workplace hang. So well done, Critique Gaming. So the only other things I want to say about like the gameplay before we get into it is, in the interrogation, you have a heart rate meter, the subject's heart rate meter, and their openness to you. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to use those to basically choose to use empathy or intimidation to get them to open up to you. Right. You can also stop the recording and like beat them up and see if that yields anything.
The other piece of it is that every interrogation is contrived to be timed. You're always interrogating like with only minutes left on the clock, right? Because something bad will happen if you don't get it done. So there's that element, like every dialogue option you click ticks off time. So that's why I think there's the desperate move of just beat them up.
Totally. Yeah. And if you do choose to beat them up, well, actually, Shane, let's talk about our gameplay experiences and then we can kind of talk about that, because I did a couple playthroughs of this and I didn't use enhanced interrogation at all until I knew that I wanted to restart one of my games. But I didn't like use it in a playthrough. So can you talk about using it?
Yeah. So I think the very first interrogation, I didn't like one of the people. Personally, and so I just beat them up because and here's my reasoning is that I really hated Kuno in Disco Elysium, and I didn't beat that kid up, and so I took it out on the next guy.
This was your chance.
It actually was an accident. I didn't mean, like, I literally I beat him too much and he passed out, so he stopped being like a person that I could interrogate, and that set off a whole spiral of events that were not good, and culminated in me getting shot in an alley. So that was the end of my first playthrough, which I assume you can get shot in an alley for lots of different things that you choose, but I think that was mostly where my problems started. The game did not like that I just beat the first suspect out.
Yeah. So one of the things you have to manage in the game is basically how the public views you, how the authorities view you, and how the media or press views you. And I think that basically if you get too low on any of those, it can cause the game, it can end. So I, in one of my playthroughs, the authorities were so mad at me that I just got fired and taken off the investigation. I think I was just doing really poorly. I think it was a combination of the way. Also, in between interrogations, you get interviewed by the press, and you have these different conversational choices, and you can sort of present, you can be like a kind of narcissistic, egocentric dick, or you can be like a by the book kind of person, and polite and stuff like that. So depending on the...
Or you can freeze out the press, which I think is what got me killed.
Or you can freeze out the press. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways that you can handle all these different relationships. And the game has a lot of multiple endings, not just the ending of the game itself, but each interrogation you can get through in different ways. And it's cool because, you know, one of the things that I had this like roller coaster experience with this game where in the beginning, I really liked it. And then I really hated it. I got really mad. And I was mashing the buttons, and it ended up like opening up a new conversational pathway just because I was mashing buttons. And that got me unstuck from the place I was in. And then I was like, oh, that's actually really cool. I see why I got that new option. And then I was like back into the game again. So one of the things I think it does pretty well that I think games with a lot of choice don't often do well is making you feel like you are authentically like impacting events in the game. In other words, you know, like sometimes when you play games, you know, where you have choices to make in a conversation, your choices are either, so like in The Witcher 3, I felt this a lot. Like you could either like be a dick or not be a dick. Like those were kind of the two. Do you know what I mean, Shane?
Yep. Absolutely.
And in this game, you definitely can choose to be a dick or not be a dick, but you can also choose to like be kind of like open, but hold back a little bit. You can choose to be kind of empathetic, but also very questioning. Like it just does a good job of, I think, like capturing nuance, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I struggled with this a little bit because like I didn't love the core gameplay of like the interrogation. Like especially because I failed once and then it just made me restart the interrogation. And then I felt like,
yeah,
like when there wasn't a fail state to move forward, like, or that moved me forward through the game, like it kind of lost some of the appeal. And then I died, so I didn't want to restart everything. And I probably want to go back to it. I'm curious more how it treats the, like the transparency angle of police work, right? Where like if transparency in press releases and transparency with the press and sort of honesty is rewarded, or if it incentivizes you to be, to like freeze out the press, to lie openly, to like kind of keep everything very close to the vest. Like I think that would probably inform my opinion of the game more than anything else, and kind of how it stances and like we talk about authority and mm-hmm. Sort of the role of police in the state and that kind of thing. I will say like I kind of joked about like, you know, using enhanced interrogation, right, and beating up a suspect, but like I actually felt really bad about it, and I felt like I'd already ruined the game by doing it, mm-hmm. Which I don't know, like from a gameplay perspective is probably not great, that is available to you, but just, you know, either scuffs your game in two more interrogations or, and is unrecoverable, or like, you know, it's kind of, I guess, thematically better that like you're not incentivized to just go beat people up and be like, you know, mm-hmm. tough man, super cop. I don't know. It's a complicated game. I mean, it's interesting. It's cheap, which is helpful. I think like, that's the part of this experience that kind of colors it for me, mm-hmm. is it's not that expensive. So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. Totally. So why don't we talk a little bit about what works in the game? Because it isn't like, I think this one is a very mixed review for us. So like what was good about it?
I mean, one of the things that I think works pretty well, it's funny because I think a lot of things that work also kind of like don't work. There were times where I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then later I would experience the same thing that I thought was cool, yeah. and be like, this is not well done at all. This is really stupid. So it's kind of a mixed bag. The game offers three difficulty modes. It's cool and I think well done. There's the visual novel difficulty mode where you just click through and you see how the story plays out. And then there's the, I think it's called detective mode, where you get hints as you're interrogating.
Yep.
And then there's interrogation mode where you don't get any hints. I actually found the detective mode to be harder to use than interrogation because I felt like that using the hints was like throwing me off a little bit. It was making me follow. Did you have that experience?
I had the same thing where the hints were not necessarily leading me to the next action. They were just pointing out observations I'd already made.
Yeah.
and then it distracted me from what I act like. Usually my first instinct was actually right, and the hint made me do something else instead, and that confused me.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I was wondering if it was like a matter of like, I'm not playing in a way that gels with this hint system or something.
I wonder if it's a translation thing.
That could be it too. That could be it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if this was originally developed like, you know, in Romanian or something, or maybe it's just like a nuance of English or something like, but it wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, I agree. I thought the hints were actually kind of challenging.
Yeah. So maybe the difficulty modes should be moved into what didn't work as opposed to what worked.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that when I got stuck on one of my playthroughs, I switched to visual novel mode because I was, like, not able to understand what the game was trying to, like, what the game wanted me to do and what I was like, what is this interrogation even about? So I flipped on visual novel mode, which let me get through that part of the game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, great. I get it. That was helpful. And then I was like, I tried to change it back to interrogation mode, and it can't be done, which it does, yeah. It does tell you when you do it, but I disregarded it. So, you know, I mean, I guess I now regret putting this in like what does work. I think the interrogation mode, I think probably there should just be the visual novel mode and the interrogation mode, and like the mode with hints can just like kind of either needs to be done better or should not be in it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think what works for me is just that there is a difficulty option that makes the full game story accessible without demanding you being a great game player.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah.
I think that's important for story-driven games, right? For sort of, especially games that are as emotionally driven as this.
Right? Totally. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, another thing that worked well for me was I liked the way that they did time pressure, where it's not just that the clock is constantly ticking down. It's that every time you make a conversational choice, the clock is ticking down.
Right. Yeah. You have all the time in the world to make your choices. It's that when you make the choice, it ticks off 5 minutes from the clock.
Yeah.
Or 5 seconds, I guess.
Five seconds. Yeah. Which I find that that's a nice middle ground between no time pressure and real time pressure, because, you know, I actually really don't enjoy time challenges in video games, even if it's just, you know, it's like a, I don't know, an action adventure game. And it's like, you know, you have to do this in 3 minutes. I hate it. I hate it so, so much. So when I saw the timer in the right-hand corner of the screen, I was like, here we go. But it, you know, it's, you really can take a whole bunch of time to like think and then make a choice, which is a little bit more forgiving, I guess.
Yep. I also liked that there tends to be like nuance in the conversation choices. Like one thing that I thought was really interesting was you can always repeat a dialogue option. A lot of times the key to move forward is to repeat a dialogue option. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, you know, if they gave you a clue about their like family and then you later learn something about their family, you go hit family again. Right. And you get an expanded response. That makes it feel more conversational than just like kind of click through an outline sort of mode. So I liked that. I think, you know, for a game about interrogation, that's necessary, but that isn't something that you often see in like kind of dialogue driven like RPGs, right? For example, like you can ask the same villager the same question 37 times and get the same response. it's a meme.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, that the nuance generally in the conversations I thought was really good. There were a couple moments where I thought that something, I had the same question as like, is this a localization thing? Or is this just like not, is this part of the game design not great? Like there are a couple jarring moments where the answers to a question or the response that you give to their answer feel kind of weird or off. But for the most part, it actually felt fairly like realistic as conversations.
Yeah, I think so there's that sort of empathy versus fear concept, right? Of like the heart rate versus the openness. Mm-hmm. I felt that often I got the predicted outcome from those conversations, right? Like the context of the conversation, like if I said something expecting it to be more empathetic, like that was the response that I got. If I said something expecting it to be more intimidating, that was the response I got, which I think is important, right? And like sometimes that context changes based on how open or how afraid they are already. Mm-hmm. And I think that like that's the kind of nuance that really worked for me, is like the same words said at a different time solicit a different response.
Absolutely.
Right, based on kind of how you've set them up. So that piece of it, I think actually works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Another thing that I put in the what works and in the what doesn't work column is the themes that the game explores. The game is like trying, I think, pretty earnestly and pretty seriously to think about social unrest and alienation and like anarcho like liberalism and extreme capitalism. And, you know, I think to say like a ton more would end up being a spoiler, which I don't want to get into, but like in some ways, first of all, I think it's admirable that the game is even trying to do this. I read an essay by one of the creators of the game who was like, look, the deal is that video games are always political, even though we don't experience them as political because, you know, we don't think of like the personal as political and we think that like games are just games and whatever. Everything has like actual real reverberations in people's lives and therefore it's political. We wanted to make a game where people have to like really grapple with that and have to grapple with like what different societal dynamics, what they look like and how they're experienced in people's day-to-day lives. And I actually think that that's really cool. And that's the thing that like is in the back of my mind almost any time I play a video game where, you know, I'm playing Horizon Zero Dawn and it's a bunch of white people with dreadlocks, or I'm playing Far Cry and it's, I mean, just like an absolute like potpourri of like weird shit. Right. But like, you know, Far Cry, I think it's like New Dawn. The bad guys are two black women. And it's like, okay, I mean, interesting choices. Let's unpack that. But, you know, we don't think of those games as like overtly political. And part of it is because like oftentimes the developers have this kind of plausible deniability of being like, no, like we're just taking some real world stuff and making a game out of it. And this game is like, hey, man, like we're here to talk about some real shit. The way they do it, I think, is sometimes really ham-fisted and kind of bad. There's some to me kind of both sides-ism going on where it's like, what if these people who are really into fascism, like these people, when you have extreme views, even if they're extreme views of social justice, that's just as bad as having extreme views of like fascism. It's not that explicit, but that is kind of the vibe I got sometimes. And I was like, not that into that. I feel like that's, you know, if you're gonna kind of try to go deep and be nuanced, that feels like a little bit reductive to me. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they were grappling with this stuff and oftentimes in a way that like got me to think about this shit.
Yeah.
So that like I put that in the like both worked and didn't work column.
Yeah. The other thing that you put in here that did not work for you is Tab Thompson, the protagonist.
Yeah.
Well, the perspective character.
Well, one of the Tab Thompson is one of the detectives on your team.
Oh, sorry.
It's not who you play as. So the deal with Tab, again, this I think is a lot like the way the game tried to do these like political themes. It's just like a real, real like shoot for the moon and hope you land amongst the stars kind of a deal. Tab is a detective on your team who...
He's the nerd, right? He's like the algorithm guy who like investigated financial crimes or something.
So they're non-binary.
Oh, okay. Did not know that.
Yeah, they're non-binary and I can't remember... They are, yeah, they're like the algorithm nerd, basically.
Okay.
And they're also like... I think they describe themselves as like a genderless, asexual... I forget, like Tab describes themselves as being like Tab has like no affect and... Or like a very flat affect, and it is very almost like robotic in the way they behave and the way they interact. And I think what you're supposed to, this might even get revealed. I just don't remember that. Like, I think Tab is maybe supposed to be on the spectrum, and they're the way that I think it's really cool that they included a non-binary character and like they're using, you know, all the people on Tab's team use they pronouns and stuff like that. And it's like not a big deal, but then And also it's like meant to not be a big deal that they, you know, are sort of, they don't really relate to other people very well, but it's like you later, I get, this is actually going to be a bit of a spoiler. So sorry. You end up interrogating Tab at one point and you can interrogate them kind of about their experience of their gender and in a way that's just like, to me, and also about kind of their affect and how they relate to other people in a way that feels very like you're kind of at the World's Fair and you're looking at an exhibit. It was like very clumsy and I felt like an earnest attempt kind of went amiss, you know?
Yeah. So is that presented in the game as a way of like sort of exploring like neurodiversity and like non-binary gender as a construct in society? Like, is it a way of like shedding a light on it? Or is it sort of like, cause I could also see that being turning the like cold gaze of the state on one of its own as well. Right. And sort of like in the way that you are like picking at every weakness you can find or every oddity or every, like anything that keeps you from being perfectly conforming, right. Is sort of the details that you pick up on for your suspects. You're now turning that on somebody who is your friend, or at least your coworker. Like, is it that sort of lens, or is it just like kind of like, here it is, like this is weird about them, now you're going to like pick at them for it, like, and just bully them?
That's a really interesting question. I have to say that I only experienced it like the second way. Not necessarily that you're going to pick on them and bully them, but that you're going to explore their otherness and kind of they'll be fetishized.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the better,
you know?
Yeah.
I do think the intention was to like have neurodiversity and, you know, diversity and gender identity in the game. It was one of those things where when you are creating characters that are non-normative in some way, you know, it seems like the choices that creators make is like, make it all about the ways in which they're non-normative, ignore it completely and have them just be like, quote unquote, regular people, like, quote unquote, the rest of us, or try to kind of do both, which, you know, kind of doing both, I think is, well, whatever, let me not even get into that. I think I understand why as a creator, you would want to do both. But I think that they sort of missed the target with this, where they tried to do both of those things and it didn't really work in either way. You know, and partially, I think the fact that like, I couldn't fully answer your question of like, what was the intent with this character, I think highlights that. And, you know, different people playing this game will have different experiences. There might be some people who are like, wow, I've never played a game that has, you know, that showcases like a neurodiverse, like, you know, neurodiversity and, you know, diversity of like gender identities. And it was cool to interact with that. And then I learned something about that. Whereas I think, you know, my experience of it was like, you know, kind of a swing and a miss.
Yeah. I don't know how I missed that. Like, I feel like the game used they for like almost everyone, like in its pronouns. And I think I just didn't get far enough that like that distinction was made for Tab.
No, that is,
I don't know. Like, I don't know how I missed it, but I feel weird that I misgendered them.
Well, I think,
them,
no, so I think you bad. Did miss it in the game because I think that you only get it further along when I think maybe like when you read the file on them or something like that.
Okay. Because I kind of skimmed that stuff. I barely cared about those characters. Like literally all I remembered was there was something with financial.
Yeah.
Crimes.
I think that, first of all, I don't think you got to that part of the game. And the other thing is that I think if you don't in the budget, if you don't allot money towards like extended HR reports, you don't get background on your agents. So that could have been why as
got
well.
It. Okay.
One other thing I you know, the game is actually like, it's weirdly like deep for a game that like, you know, you can allegedly finish in 6 hours. I think it took me probably more like 10 to finish my playthrough. There's a lot of like, there's another thing where I don't know if you got to this part, Shane, but you can choose. It tells you to select a memory. Did you get to that?
Yes. Isn't that how you get perks?
Aren't those
memories?
Yeah, they're basically
perks.
Yeah. So you can select like, being more empathetic or being a master of ideology or being naturally intimidating. And in these different, you get to choose them like after not every interrogation, but maybe every other one or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, that also changes the dialogue options you're going to get. There are, you know, later in the game, you get to interview like experts, like professors in various kind of ideologies. You actually get, I don't know if this happens to everyone. Like you get, there's like an absolutely buck wild interrogation that you're the subject of, which is like bananas. So the game is like weirdly deep. And I say weirdly just because like, it's a little indie game that, right, you know, you can finish in like, let's say between 6 and 10 hours. But there's actually like a lot of systems at play. And they didn't always work for me, but when they did, it worked like surprisingly well, I guess.
So let's kind of sum that up then. I mean, would you recommend this game? Like, is it a net positive? Because I think it's a mostly positive on Steam right now. Would you recommend the game? Would you recommend it with reservations? Like, where do you come out on it?
Yeah, I think I would recommend with reservations. I mean, the thing I would say is that if the idea of like doing conversational puzzles, it's like a meal with a bunch of sides. Mm-hmm. Like the interrogation is the meal and the sides are like you talk to the press and you do the press release, mm-hmm, and you hang out with your agents. If that is appealing to you just like in terms of how you play a game and you like puzzles, I would say I recommend it, especially because it's I got it for $12.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
If it was like a $40 game, I don't know.
Right. But it's on sale and it's, you know. That helps.
Yeah. I think also just if you're the kind of person that likes puzzles, but not the kind of puzzles where you know, like in The Witness where you're moving around like pieces on a board, right. but like kind of logic conversational puzzles. But Shane, what about you? Would you recommend it?
It's tough for me. So I got a weird early ending and that really put me off, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't feel like I was very far into the game, even though I guess like on a chapter by chapter basis, I was further along than I thought. So that was like, I thought that was a little weird. Like I also failed an interrogation and had to go back, which I found very frustrating, mostly because I was looking for the dialogue option that would move forward. And I just was, I was just clicking dialogue options, trying to find it. Like I knew what I needed to do. I just didn't know how to, you know, and it was just like, okay, well, like now the game interface is between me and the solution, not the answer between, you know, totally. I'm not searching for the answer. I'm searching for the way to input the answer. Right. And that's annoying. So it was a little mixed on that. Like the cop theme I'm more or less fine with. I kind of like the shape of the story as it was going. I like the kind of management angle of your team. Like I had a very like, you know, playing Lieutenant Daniels in The Wire kind of feel to it. Even though it has this like weird noir aesthetic that like I thought was way out of place.
You did.
Kind of. Yeah. Like I didn't feel like it was a very noir story at all. But maybe that's I'm coming from Disco Elysium as well as the last cop game that I played. So I don't know. Like, I mean, at $12, yeah, I would recommend it. Like if the gameplay itself sounds interesting, I think the gameplay is good enough to spend $12 on. I'll have to go back to it and see if like the overall shape of it comes out in favor or not. But I think, yeah, I think for $12, it's good.
Yeah. It's also probably a fun game to play with someone else, like on the couch. I was thinking actually about like playing it. It has a lot of replay value because it has a bazillion different endings. You can play it with another person. I will say that the fail state thing is something that I think is a difference between the way you and I play games, because I was so psyched that I got to try it again when I failed, you know, whereas.
Well, mine was frustration though, right? Because it wasn't that. Because again, I had the answer. Like I had gotten the clue that I needed to like move forward. I knew who the suspect was. Like I had it, and I just couldn't find the freaking option to accuse. You know, like I just wanted to hit the j'accuse button.
Totally. Yeah, I will say that like I had a lot of frustrating moments with this game of being in that very situation, and I'm not clear on if it was because I wasn't understanding something or if like there's just some not great logic behind how you get those new conversational choices. And in fact, I will say that like the last chapter, I don't think the logic works very well at all. Okay. So I, as you can see, I'm very divided on this game. I was like very into it and very interested in it, but also feeling like annoyed at some of the ways that it, you know, some of the choices around like gameplay.
Yeah. Fair. I don't know. It's an interesting game. I'm glad we talked about it. You know, kind of a hesitant recommendation, I guess, is kind of where we land.
Yeah, hesitant recommendation. I mean, if people have recommendations for games that are like I love that it was like the main, you know, the main thing is like the interrogation, but then there's all this management stuff too. Yeah. Like, but it's never too much management or too much of the main gameplay. Right. I would be totally, it's that that's like a just like a genre I could get into.
Yep.
Okay. So I feel like we've super exhausted that topic.
Yeah, we've beat this to death. No, indeed. bad phrasing.
Much like a suspect in one of Shane's playthroughs. Is that in poor taste?
Yes.
It's okay.
Sorry, I opened it.
So let's close out by talking about something we are excited about right now. Would you mind starting, Shane?
Sure. My wife and I are watching Letterkenny, which is a Canadian comedy. About a small town called Letterkenny in like a rural Ontario. It's about the problems and daily lives of hicks, skids, hockey players, and I don't know, a handful of other weirdos within this little town. It's like very dialogue driven. It's like kind of the ranty comedy and then like a lot of like pun oriented comedy. It's like a lot of people just sitting around making jokes. And it's just, I don't know. It's the lighthearted kind of thing that I need right now, intermixed with punk rock and fist fights, I guess.
nice.
It's like my wife and I were joking, like it's kind of a it's kind of a show. It's like a comedy show about fist fighting, is kind of what it comes down to. So, but anyway, yeah, it's, you know, it's just lighthearted enough and just witty enough that it's filling a need right now. So yeah, I'm about halfway through the show. I think we've finished like four seasons, but it's short.
Where do you watch it?
Hulu, in the US. Okay. It's on Crave TV in Canada, but every Canadian I've ever met knows about this thing. So I think they already knew that.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, you sent me a couple clips and it was really, really funny. And it seems also just like a very Shane show.
Yeah, it's very much I can't deny this. So what are you excited about?
Okay, so I have been listening to this podcast called California Love by Walter Thompson Hernandez. And it is basically, so it's on the LAist network. And Walter Thompson Hernandez is a journalist who has moved back to Los Angeles and is just basically making a podcast about their LA, like their experience of LA and the people in LA and the environment, the terrain. And it's really, really lovely and just interesting. And just when when you read a really good, like, feature length article about something or someone, that's what this podcast feels like. You know, it's engaging and interesting. And Walter Thompson Hernandez is just funny and likable and all that good stuff. So it's about the world right now without being about, you know, the pandemic mm-hmm. or the election. So it's like, oh, I can experience like the real world without thinking about sort of the nightmarish hellscape that we're in, yeah. Which is really, really nice.
Yeah.
So highly recommend it.
I'm very surprised this isn't about cults, given that it's called California Love and you're recommending it.
I know. Honestly, like if someone wants to start a podcast about cults called California Love, I'd also be very into that. That would be great.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm sure I'll have something cult related to recommend in a couple of
Perfect.
Weeks. All right, so we did it. That is it for this episode. Please, if you would, rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yep, and you can join us on Twitter at @CoopModPod with no punctuation, or you can follow me, Shane, at @Mundangerous. That's MUN dangerous.
And you can follow me at Sally T. And you can email us at coopmoodpod@gmail.com.
And you can find us and other great gaming podcasts on the OneShot Network at oneshotpodcast.com.
Co-op Mood is produced by Shane and Sally. Edited by Lucas. Our music is Pixel Squirrel by Espresso Music. Logo design by Emily Cardamus.